KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, in for Michael Krasny. If you ever stop to think about it, you might be surprised to see just how much plastic is in your life. Not just things like water bottles and smartphones, even our food and clothing contain plastic. After seeing a provocative photo of a dead bird whose stomach was filled with disposable plastic stuff, East Bay author Beth Terry set out to rid her life of plastic. She writes about it on her blog and in her new book, Plastic Free. She joins us to talk about the quest to kick her plastic habit and what you can do to make your life plastic free. We'll get started with Forum right after this. And welcome once again to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Michael Krasny. Remember the 1967 film The Graduate? There's a scene where a family friend corners Dustin Hoffman at his college graduation party with a bit of advice.
I just want to say one word to you. Just one word.
Yes, sir.
Are you listening?
Yes, I am.
Plastics.
Exactly how do you mean?
There's a great future in plastics. Think about it. Will you think about it?
Yes, I will.
Enough said. That's a deal.
Turns out that was pretty good advice. Plastic is pretty much everywhere these days, and if you don't believe me, you can just ask our next guest. Oakland writer Beth Terry set out to rid her life of plastic, and as she writes in her new book, Plastic Free, it's easier said than done. She joins us now to talk about her quest and the book that resulted. Beth Terry, good to have you with us.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here.
Well, you know, before this quest, you were addicted to plastic. I think that was your word.
Yeah.
Where did you find plastic once you started looking for it?
Well, I originally just thought of plastic like most people do, plastic bags and plastic containers. But as I started trying to reduce my plastic consumption, I found that any paper container, like a paper cup that holds liquid, is lined inside and out with plastic. Frozen food containers, milk cartons, ice cream containers. So that was a surprise to me. I had been drinking wine for a while and not realizing that a lot of the wine corks and the wine bottles were made from plastic. And one of the most shocking surprises was to find out that most chewing gum is made from plastic.
It has you're chewing on plastic.
You're chewing on plastic.
And what's wrong with plastic?
Well, there are a number of things. I mean, it is a very versatile material, and it's good for certain things, but we're overusing it, and we're using it for the wrong purposes. First of all, it doesn't biodegrade, which means it lingers in the environment. It is ending up in our oceans and filling up our oceans with plastic. It breaks down in the ocean, but it doesn't biodegrade, so it is mixing with the bottom of the food chain, the zooplankton, and then it gets eaten by fish, and those fish get eaten by bigger fish, and we end up ending up with plastic in our food. And plastic in the ocean collects toxic chemicals. And another thing that I learned that I didn't know right away is that plastics contain lots of additives, and those additives can leach out, and many of them are toxic, and many of them can disrupt our hormones.
Things like bisphenol A.
Bisphenol A and phthalates are another class of chemicals. But there are many, many other additives in plastics that we don't even know about, and the plastics industry is not required to disclose.
So I know that there was a photo that got you really thinking about this. Tell us a little bit about the photo, describe it, and what it was that you found so disturbing.
About 5 years ago, I was on the internet and I stumbled across an article about the plastic pollution problem in the ocean. And the photo was of a dead albatross chick on Midway Island, which is halfway between the United States and Japan. The flesh was worn away and all you could see were the bones. And inside were lots of everyday plastic pieces like bottle caps, things that didn't originate from the middle of the ocean, things that I was using and throwing away on a daily basis. And for some reason, that photo shocked me more than any other environmental photo I'd ever seen before. And first I was angry, and then I got really sad. And then I realized that my daily lifestyle choices, just going through my life, was contributing to this problem.
There was even, I think, a toothbrush, wasn't there, in the
and they
had
found
been the stomach.
This what I learned then was that this island is strewn with similar carcasses. They eat toothbrushes, they eat lighters, they eat all kinds of plastic that resembles food. And it turns out that the mama birds fly hundreds of miles out over the ocean to gather food for their chicks to bring back for them and regurgitate, just like penguin mothers do. And they're feeding their babies plastic instead, and the babies' stomachs are filling up, and they're starving.
So you saw that photo, and what did you do?
Well, the first thing, I just decided to see what it would be like to try to live without acquiring any new plastic. I actually kind of thought it would be a fun experiment. And also to see what my plastic footprint was, I put a bag under my kitchen table and I just started collecting all the plastic waste that I generated. And I made a blog and I made a spreadsheet because I'm an accountant for a living for my day job. And started tallying up all the different kinds of plastic. And as I would use something up, I would try to find a plastic-free alternative and record that on the blog. And I'm still doing that. The blog is myplasticfreelife.com.
And so what surprised you as you began looking at your consumption or acquisition of plastic?
Well, most of it was food packaging, turned out. And what I learned most about myself was that I was not living a very healthy lifestyle. I was addicted to frozen microwavable meals. And I tried really, really hard to find a microwavable meal that wasn't packaged in plastic because I thought it just had to be there. And I went to the store and I must have bought every single brand of frozen convenience food there was. And I learned that if it's leak-proof, it's got plastic in it. There's just no getting around it. So I actually had to learn to go to the farmer's market, buy whole foods, cook whole foods. I still don't cook very much. It's not that hard. And especially in the Bay Area, we have so many great resources. But I think I'm healthier because of it.
Yeah. And you know, a lot of us, I think, feel that as long as we recycle, we're good. You know, we throw that water bottle or juice container, whatever it is, into the blue bin or whatever color it is. And, you know, hey, we've done our part. We haven't contributed to the problem. Not true.
Well, I have a whole chapter in my book called Why Can't We Just Recycle It? Recycling is necessary for the plastic waste that we do generate, but it's not the be-all solution to the problem. First of all, plastic recycling is better referred to as downcycling, and that's because it doesn't really close the loop. For example, if you take a plastic bottle, normally, it doesn't get recycled into another plastic bottle. It's going to get recycled into polar fleece or carpet or some kind of textile. And those things generally don't get further recycled. So it's just slowing down the process from cradle to grave. Another thing a lot of people don't realize is that most of our plastic recycling here in the U.S., and especially on the West Coast, gets shipped to China overseas. And some of the recycling conditions in those in China are not very environmentally friendly.
Like what?
Well, Sky News actually did an expose of a town, an entire town in China, that had become a toxic waste dump for the West's plastic recycling. There were people melting it down without using any kind of protective gear or masks on their faces. The air was full of toxic fumes. The water was polluted. And they actually traced back some recycling from the UK from somebody's bin that had made it to this town.
And what are they? Are they like melting it down and turning it into Walmart toys, or what are they doing with it?
Well, they can turn it into lots of different products. It's just that the way they're doing it is not very environmentally friendly.
Yeah, and there's not much awareness of that because you know we for example here in the Bay Area we there's much attention given to all the great recycling facilities we have.
Right, and we do need. I'm not saying that that we shouldn't recycle. We should recycle, but before we even think about recycling, recycling should be the last resort. We should think about reducing and refusing single-use disposables and getting as much plastic out of our life as we can.
That is Beth Perry. She's our guest this hour. Her new book is called Plastic Free, How I Kicked the Plastic Habit and How You Can Too. She's also author of MyPlasticFreeLife.com. And if you want to join us this hour, let us know about the plastic in your life. Do you feel that your recycling is enough? And, you know, have you tried to reduce plastic that you use, and how hard was it? 866-733-6786 is the number. 866-733-6786. You can also email us. It's forum@kqed.org, or you can leave comments on Forum's Facebook page as well. I saw the... I'm sorry, you're trying to tell me something. What?
Terry,
what did I say?
Perry.
Oh, it's Beth Terry, not Beth
Perry.
I was
trying to tell you subtly, so we didn't
well,
have to announce
you know, it's all live here. So tell us, I looked on your blog, and I saw a chart that shows the decline in your plastic use.
Yeah.
And you walked in here this morning with a single bag, not plastic. It is plastic, actually, the bag.
It is a plastic bag.
And it's filled with what? One plastic bag filled with what?
This is filled with my collected plastic waste from 2011.
The entire 12 months.
The entire 12 months. So this is just a regular size grocery bag, plastic grocery bag.
And so are these the things that, what, you just couldn't eliminate?
These are the things I couldn't eliminate. This is both recyclable and non-recyclable plastic.
Uh-huh.
And so there are some things in here like, for example, prescription bottles, which we can't refill in California, so they just end up in the recycling. There's a supplement powder that we put in our homemade cat food for our cats, but we go through one of those maybe every 2 or 3 months, and that's the only packaging involved in feeding our cats.
What else did you end up with?
There is some packing tape. Whenever I place an order, I always request no plastic packaging ahead of time. But it seems like the tape is the one area where a lot of companies trip up. And, you know, they've already invested in the tape, so they want to go ahead and use that. And then there are some odds and ends. You know, every time I go to a restaurant, I request no plastic straw, but sometimes I end up with one anyway. There was one bar that I went to where I said I didn't want a plastic straw in my drink, and they brought my drink without the straw, but it had a little plastic fancy doodad in it anyway.
Like a little umbrella or something?
Yeah, it wasn't an umbrella, but it was some fancy schmancy thing.
Yeah. Well, I should say that our social media coordinator, Amanda Stupai, put out a challenge to all of us to just sort of keep track of the plastic in our own lives here, the folks here at KQED. And you walked in with that bag from all of last year.
Yeah.
I walked in with a similar size bag from the last 12 hours and had, you know, it wasn't quite full.
No.
But it had a bunch of stuff in it.
Yeah.
In my own defense, I wasn't trying to cut back. I was just sort of monitoring.
Right.
And I think that's where you start, right, is what you're using now.
That's exactly it. And I don't recommend that anybody try to do it all at once. It's important to take it step by step. And that's the way I wrote the book, to try to take people step by step and give them solutions. But I emphasize constantly, choose one thing, make it a habit, do the next step, make it a habit. If you try to do everything all at once and you're not as stubborn and compulsive as I am, you're probably bound for failure.
All right. Well, I want to bring in one of our listeners, Marianne Davis, who took your sort of plastic trash challenge for 1 month. And Marianne, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Hi.
So tell us what you found out when you tried to reduce the amount of plastic.
Oh, well, you know, it was really interesting. I had discovered Beth's website through a friend of mine, and I already thought I was pretty good about plastic. I bring canvas bags to all the grocery stores. I don't drink bottled water. But I was curious to see how much plastic I was consuming, and so I just started taking the weekly challenge. And I was just really surprised at how much things added up, and things that I think, oh, it's just this week, it's just an exception. Or, you know, when I started reading the articles she put up that are also in the book about cosmetics, I started looking at my bath products and saw plastic as an ingredient in, like, my face wash. I didn't know about the bisphenol A in the milk cartons, so I switched to glass milk bottles. I've also switched, we enjoy our gin and tonics in the summer, and we bought a soda stream, which is something where you can carbonate your own beverages from your tap water so that you don't have to go out and keep on buying bottled beverages to make your drinks in the evening. So, you know, each week we sort of took on a new challenge, and it really was a revelation. And now I'd say between recycling, which we are trying to decrease, I mean, it sounds kind of funny, but we're trying to decrease the amount of stuff that goes in our recycling bin. But between recycling and our compost pile, we take out the trash about once a month, and it's a pretty small bag.
Is that cut down on, you think you could get some kind of a deal from your garbage collector on that?
But... You would think. But unfortunately, once you get below a certain size, they're just like, nope, sorry, that's the smallest trash can. So we're looking at other ways. I mean, we have friends in the neighborhood who are doing similar things, so maybe there's a way to combine forces. But it for us, it's just sort of a matter of pride now that how much, you know, how little goes out of the house.
What's been the toughest thing to eliminate?
Oh, gosh. Well, there's certainly things that we're still working on. My husband loves his chewing gum, and he loves his hard candies, and those are such little things. And so, I mean, we're working with that right now and trying to find other things that satisfy that sweet tooth need, but don't involve as much wrapping. But
do you think through every purchasing decision now, like when you go to the store?
Oh, yeah, and it's amazing how just the awareness that comes through doing the challenge that you start, whenever you touch plastic, you kind of are like, oh, wait a second, what do I do about this? I really need this. Is there an alternative to this? I'm really looking forward to it. I haven't done it yet, but I've printed out Beth's recipes for homemade mustard, mayonnaise, ketchup, you know, things that you don't need to get in a plastic bottle. I mean, back in the day, everybody made their own fresh, and why not? So, you know, I love good food, and so this sort of falls in line with my values around good food and, you know, a vegetable garden in the backyard and trying to keep things as organic and fresh as possible.
And Beth Terry, do you give feedback to your local, you know, stores about ways that they can reduce plastic?
Absolutely. One of the things that I started doing when I first started this was to write letters to everybody. I mean, I was just so pumped about it. And every time I found something that I really wanted to have that didn't come without plastic, I would write to the company and ask them to switch their packaging. And I actually did have one company change their packaging because of a letter that I wrote to them.
Which one?
That was a small online company called Laundry Tree that makes a product called Soap Nuts, which you can use to wash your clothes. And they were packaging them in big plastic bags. And so I emailed them and said, would you consider packaging your natural product in a more natural packaging? And the woman said, we've been wanting to, but we just don't know what to switch to. Will you help me? So I don't even think I helped her. I think I just gave her encouragement.
Gave her an
idea.
And
in less than a month, she had changed her packaging.
Yeah. And Marianne, what about you? Have you started proselytizing with your local merchants?
Oh, you know, that's sort of what feels like the next phase for me. And I really, kudos to Beth for her website and her book, because I feel like I started out trying to look at my own behavior and just, you know, sort of live my own values. I don't think that my not using plastic is going to make a big dent in, you know, the plastic gyre out in the ocean. But once you start changing your behavior, and for instance, I went to the local food court. Now I bring a plate rather than, you know, and there's a huge bunch of people in line in front and behind me who are taking out styrofoam containers. And just that sort of act, I feel, is in some way sort of spreading the message. But when you sit in a food court and you look at all of the styrofoam containers and plastic containers that flow into the trash cans just in one small food court in one city, and you multiply that by how many food courts there are across the nation, and these are people who are using these containers for, you know, tops 10, 20 minutes while they eat, and then they're going to spend how many years breaking down? So I really, for me, it feels like the next step is how do I get involved locally and try and set up some of the like citywide plastic bans that have been going on in California and get to sort of spread the message to Minnesota. I mean, we're at the Mississippi headwaters. It seems like there's a real strong connection to water quality here as well as, you know, just clean environment. So
Beth?
Yeah, I want to totally agree. For me, the first step was changing my personal behavior. But then once I saw the extremity of the problem, like Marianne was saying, you know, you go outside and you see plastic bags blowing down the street. You go to the grocery store and people are taking plastic bags. And it just seems so overwhelming. That's when you realize we need change on a systemic level. And right now in Sacramento, there are two plastic-related bills that I would like to mention.
State legislation.
Yeah. So one is AB 298, which is a plastic bag bill to ban plastic bags in the state and require businesses to charge for paper or reusable bags.
Which is the law, I think, in San Francisco, isn't it? And other Bay Area cities?
Yeah. So
with some exceptions.
So the way it's been going has been city by city by city. And so this would make it law for the entire state. And so then we could stop going city, you know, trying to do this city by city by
city. How's that working out, do you think, in the places that it's happening?
I think it's going well, except that the plastic bag manufacturers or industry sues, basically. I don't want to get into all the ins and outs of it, but they are requiring environmental impact reports from every single city that wants to do it, and these cities don't have the funds,
the resources, yeah,
to do that. So that's why we need it on a state level.
Yeah. And Marianna, you know, I could see, and to Beth as well, I mean, I could see this becoming something of an obsession. is it?
Definitely for the people who are, you know, the accounting types, I'm sure.
And what about you?
I think for me, it's going to be an interesting process. I think certainly I've been, I'm trying not to proselytize so much to my friends that they don't like me anymore. but to just, I think the main thing is to live by example and try and be as focused as possible. I mean, I really have just got to give kudos to Beth because I feel like she's really giving the materials for all of us to sort of explore our own values and then take those next steps. And she's like given me a bunch of tips on who to contact with the, you know, city management, state legislation, environmental organizations to try and, you know, move steps forward here. But yeah, I think if I'm going to get obsessed about any cause, this is a good one.
All right. Marianne Davis, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Good luck to you.
Yep.
And I imagine, you know, Beth, that's music to your ears.
Great. It's wonderful. I mean, it's really, really important to me to magnify my personal actions in this way, you know, because for me to make these personal changes in my own life, it makes me feel good about myself. It makes me feel good that I'm not personally contributing to the problem. But if I want to see change on a big level, if I want to really make a dent, then I need to take what I'm doing and magnify it by setting an example, you know, through my blog, through my book, and helping people so they don't have to do all the research that I've already done to figure out how to do it.
All right, let's see if we can sneak a call in here before the break. Let's go to Oakland and Christina. Hi.
Hi, thanks for raising awareness of this really important issue. Oakland is in the process of telling its restaurant vendors that they can't use styrofoam for to-go types of orders for their food takeout. And so I'm seeing a lot of replacements with a corn-based type of product. It's very solid, and I think that the number on the back of the package is maybe 7, but it says it's, you can just toss it in the trash because it's completely biodegradable and earth-friendly. Is it earth-friendly, or is there also plastic in that packaging?
You know what? I have a whole section in my book on bioplastics and the differences because there are lots of different kinds. Some of them are biodegradable. Some of them are not. Biodegradable is not a very well-defined term. There are certain certifications for bioplastics that are compostable. Bioplastic is not great in a landfill because landfills are not meant for things to break down. And when biomaterial breaks down in a landfill, it actually creates methane gas, which is a more potent greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. And not all of these containers will actually break down in a compost facility. So they're meant for compost facilities, but it depends on how long they actually sit in the compost. So there are some things, for example, utensils, which tend to be pretty hard, thick and hard. They come through the compost almost intact a lot of times. And also, corn-based plastics are problematic because they are usually made from GMO corn. They are usually grown with a lot
genetically modified.
Yes, genetically modified. They are usually grown with a lot of petroleum-based pesticides and fertilizers and things like that. And so they have a lower carbon footprint than petroleum-based plastic, but they may also be problematic.
Not a great solution. Not a perfect solution anyway. Christina, thanks so much for the call. Join us. We've got much more to talk about. Again, the number here at Forum, KQED's program this morning, all about plastics, 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786, or you can email us. It's forum@kqed.org. All the red tape is mechanical rape of the TV program waste. Data control and IBM, science is mankind's brother. But all I see is draining me on my plastic fantastic lover. And welcome back to Forum. Scott Schaefer here today for Michael Krasny. And my guest this hour is Beth Terry. She has decided to rid her life of plastic as best she can. Her new book is called Plastic Free, How I Kicked the Plastic Habit and How You Can Too. She's also the author of MyPlasticFreeLife.com. If you want to join us this hour, the number 866-733-6786. You can also email your thoughts. It's forum@kqed.org. Let's go to the phones now. And Eileen in Mountain View. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. And thanks to Beth for her good work. Besides the fact that those little plastic bags fold up really flat and you can reuse them, put them in your pocket or purse, and besides the fact that I just wrote to the company where I get my used books online, and they just started packaging everything in plastic, so I wrote them a letter.
Did they respond?
Not yet. I don't know if they will. I don't expect mail back from online companies. But I bike, and the street cleaners don't get the plastic that's beside the road, and there's a lot of it. There's a lot of plastic that people just toss out of their cars, and sometimes I pick that up. Not every day, but I try to pick up three things a day if I can.
Right.
And I just think it's going to be up to us if we care about the plastic in the ocean. The stuff by the side of the road is really close to the drains, and you know, you think, oh, that's not my job, but it has to be.
Yeah, and Beth, that's sort of your point,
that's
isn't it? To get people thinking about it and doing what they can.
Right, exactly. That's fantastic.
Thanks for the call.
And, you know, it's not just litterers. And this is one of the arguments that the plastics industry makes, is that we just need to educate people not to litter. But I watch plastic fly all over the street when the garbage people come or when the recycling people come to pick it up. You know, it's not just a matter of people who are not thinking and are careless and are tossing their plastic on the street.
You mean the garbage collectors themselves
are
being kind of sloppy?
Yeah, well, they use those mechanical arms that pick up the bin and dump it, and stuff just flies because plastic is so lightweight.
Yeah. All right, back to the phones. Michael in San Francisco. Good morning.
Oh, hi. Sorry. This is fantastic. I'm really enjoying this interview. I wondered if Beth could talk more about the effects, not just the environmental effects of plastic on the birds, et cetera, but more the effects on us as human beings from consuming plastic. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay. Thanks for the call.
That was my husband, by the way. Full disclosure.
Oh, I see.
I didn't know he was going to call.
All right. Well, too bad we let him go. I have some questions for him, but go ahead.
He's changed a lot too, actually. not as much as I have, but that's okay. So plastics, as I mentioned before, contain a lot of additives. When you look at the number on the bottom of a container, that tells you just what the polymer is, but it doesn't tell you what else has been added to it to affect the quality. So there are chemicals added to affect the strength, the flexibility, the softness. They even add antibacterial chemicals to plastics sometimes. And those additives are not bound to the material, and so they can leach out, especially when plastic is heated or subjected to rough treatment. And a lot of the additives in plastics are what we call endocrine disruptors, which means they mimic the action of hormones in the body, and they are linked to all kinds of problems, reproductive disorders, developmental problems, diabetes, obesity, even autism. There are a whole spectrum of disorders that are, and more, that they're discovering every day. And one of the problems with these chemicals is that they do their work at very, very, very tiny doses. So in large doses, they are toxic and the body doesn't recognize them as hormones. But at very small doses, the body just thinks they're hormones telling the body what to do. So that's a big problem.
Yeah. And are there alternatives? I mean, do these things have to be, do they have to be put into, are there good alternatives, or are they just cheap and easy? And
well, that's why there is a green chemistry movement of scientists working to develop chemicals that are safe. But one of the problems is that in this country, we don't have good toxic chemical legislation. And there is a bill in the Senate right now, the U.S. Senate, called the Safe Chemicals Act. And it's really important that we contact our senators and let them know that we support this, because it will make sure that chemicals are safe before they get put on the market. That's S-847.
Yeah. What kind of feedback, if any, are you getting, or reaction from the plastics industry?
So far, I haven't gotten any.
What does that tell you?
I'm just waiting for it.
They're not scared.
I don't know. They're not scared. Why aren't they scared of me? I would love, you know what? I would love to dialogue with the plastics industry. And I have actually been quoted in Plastics News and had a conversation with some people in the plastics industry who considered me to actually be fairly reasonable because I don't hate plastic. I just really hate what we're doing with it.
Yeah. All right. Let's go back to the phones again. The number 866-733-6786. And Sam and Hayward, you're on with Beth Terry.
Hi. Quick question and a comment. First, the comment. I'm in the process of moving from the Bay Area to Chicago, and it's just amazing how the attitudes vary in terms of recycling and reduce, reuse, recycle concepts. They're just getting started with recycling now in certain areas of Chicago, and I'm just a little bit amazed. But my question is, how can you purchase meat in a supermarket and be plastic-free?
Well, I don't know what resources will be available in Chicago, but what we do is take our own container to the butcher counter and ask them to put meat in it. Now, we don't actually buy very much meat for ourselves. I'm a vegetarian, but we have two cats, and they are obligate carnivores. And my husband takes a stainless steel bucket to the butcher shop, and they put ground turkey right in the bucket. It took a little explaining, but you know, we're regulars now, and they're used to it.
It's like, oh, here come the Terries,
and the great
bucket of turkey.
Yeah. And the great thing about it is that it sets an example for other people, because almost every time someone will say, "Wow, I didn't know you could do that," and it's just because they hadn't thought of it and hadn't asked.
Yeah, and what about, I mean, there's all kinds of foods that have plastic wrap, cheese, you know, not so much produce, but even that. I mean, you go into a Whole Foods, for example, and they have the pre-chopped stir-fry vegetables, Trader Joe's, everything's wrapped in plastic.
Trader Joe's is the worst. I mean, really. And I actually would really like people to contact Trader Joe's and ask them why they have to wrap so much of their produce in plastic when other groceries, they're worse than Safeway. And I don't feel
bad
saying
that. Have you contacted them?
I have, and other people have too, and I think it's time for a campaign and a petition, perhaps.
And so you've had no response?
No.
And what about Whole Foods?
Whole Foods does a lot less of it. Now, they do the prepackaged, chopped, cut things, like you were saying, but we can just avoid those. We don't have to have those.
Well,
it
if you go to the meat counter, if you can afford it, they wrap it in paper, although now that you mention it, I bet it has some plastic.
It's lined with plastic. It is. That's what makes it leak-proof.
Yeah. All right. Sam, thanks so much for the call. How about, does it Giba or Giba? Giba in Oakland. Welcome.
Actually, it's Deborah.
Oh, it's Deborah. I'm going to blame Judy Campbell for that, our producer. She couldn't hear you. But hi, Deborah.
No problem.
Go ahead.
So I may have missed it. I do really try to think about packaging when I'm shopping, and I'm so thrilled that you wrote this book, because in a way I've been thinking I should try to go on a plastic fast, but it's really, really hard, obviously, if you're not very organized and prepared. But just certain things that I don't know how else to get them, like shampoo.
Mm.
How can you buy shampoo without, you know, buying it in a plastic container?
Yeah, you can buy it bulk, I guess.
Yeah, but even so, what will you keep it in?
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you want to bring a glass container into the shower?
No.
For the obvious reason.
Yeah, right.
So what would you do about something like that?
So actually, I have a whole chapter in my book on personal care and cleaning items. Shampoo is not difficult, because there are actually shampoo bars that you can buy, which are just like a soap bar, except they're shampoo. And there are lots of different companies that make them. One company that I like is an online company called Chagrin Valley. There's also the store Lush, L-U-S-H, which is in San Francisco. They sell soap bars, deodorant bars. Now, some of their ingredients are questionable, I think, because they do use some synthetic ingredients. So it might be better to look for a shampoo bar from an online source instead. And there's also a method called No Poo. Which,
I heard about that one.
Yeah, that's what I use, and it works really well for me. This is going to sound strange, but it works really well. You wash your hair with a solution of baking soda and water. It's 1 tablespoon of baking soda per cup of water.
Uh-huh.
And then you scrub it through your scalp. You really don't want it through your hair. You just clean your scalp with it. You rinse your hair, and then you rinse with a combination of apple cider vinegar and water. And
How does that smell?
Well, I add a few drops of rosemary essential oil to it, which which makes it smell really nice. And the smell dissipates from your hair really fast. I bet don't if you, you smell my like... hair, you won't be able to tell.
Well, not, now that I know you're... Never mind.
Vinegar is really good for hair.
What, it doesn't have like... Don't you have like clumps of like stuff in your hair?
No,
when
you're
done?
No. It all dissolves? Because it's a... Yeah, because it's just a weak solution. It's just a little bit of baking soda per water. There's no clumps.
Yeah. All right.
Well, do you see clumps in my hair?
I don't see any clumps in your hair. Exactly. All right. Thanks very much. You know, I asked you earlier if you were obsessed with this. And actually, I asked the caller. But, you know, do you ever feel, does your family, that's why I wish your husband was still on the line, but I would ask him, I mean, do they ever say, oh, come on, Mom, or come on, just like knock it off. Like, can't we just have some cheese, you know?
Yeah. Well, I personally don't have kids, but I think there might be somebody else that's going to come on the show who does. But my friends are, in the beginning, I think they were afraid to go shopping with me because they were afraid that I was going to be criticizing or judging them. And I, you know, I'm human, so of course thoughts cross my mind. But for the most part, I don't criticize other people. I realize that this is difficult. I'm doing the research because it's fun, so other people don't have to. And I don't. I want to use myself as an example to show what's possible, and let people go at their own pace, but just to wake up and be mindful about their choices.
Yeah. Well, and you, as you mentioned, we do have someone with us now who has kids, Danielle Rasharda, who is joining us from Wilmington, North Carolina. Danielle, good to have you with us.
Hey, nice to be here.
Tell us a little bit about the challenge you took, the plastic trash challenge.
I decided to collect my trash for 52 weeks in 2011. And I did that, and we're a family of five. I have three children. And I just decided to collect it to see what would happen and how it could keep me focused on reducing my plastic waste.
What did you find?
I mainly found that there are some things that are really easy to eliminate. But then with kids, obviously, there are some times that they want things and I have to let them figure it out on their own and make the decisions themselves about choosing plastic or non-plastic.
Like what? What were some of the tougher calls you had to make?
Like we went to vacation, and we don't have a snow cone place here, and my kids really wanted snow cones. Well, the only way to get a snow cone is in a styrofoam cup. So my kids got snow cones, but they didn't get straws.
Mm-hmm. That was the compromise. So,
right. We like to make compromises, and I like to let my kids make decisions for themselves. And
what did they eat it with?
Their mouths.
They said they just chewed it, like kind of, yeah.
Yeah, they have mouth, you know, they obviously use their mouth.
Like an ice
we
cream
also
cone,
have
yeah.
To-go, yeah, we also have, like, to-go spoons that they can use.
That you bring with you?
Right.
Yeah. And so do you get that kind of pushback from them that I was asking about earlier? Do they, oh, come on, Mom, lighten up.
There are times that they do that. It's mainly with food things like cookies and stuff. But anytime we have an issue with it, my kids are like, okay, well, if you're not going to buy it, let's just make it. So we've made potato chips. I make fruit leather. I make graham crackers. I make a lot of fun things, and it's a lot of fun in the kitchen for my kids.
Yeah, and it's an educational thing, but it's fun as well.
Yeah, it's super fun.
Yeah.
I mean, how many people dance around their kitchens because they've made something that they've been told they can't make it?
Yeah.
Because it's so overproduced.
Yeah. Beth, what about you? What are some of the things you make?
You know what? My most favorite, I have recipes in the book for a lot of these things. And my most favorite discovery was chocolate syrup. So instead of Hershey's chocolate syrup in the squeeze bottle or organic chocolate syrup in the squeeze bottle, I make chocolate syrup that comes from mostly plastic-free ingredients. So it's cocoa powder from the bulk bin, sugar from the bulk bin, tap water, salt, which comes in a cardboard box or from the bulk bin, and then there's a little bit of vanilla in it. And the only plastic is the plastic cap on mm-hmm. the glass vanilla bottle. And it tastes so much better than store-bought chocolate syrup. It lasts a long time. I love it. I love to do it.
Yeah. And like when you go to buy things in bulk, do you mm-hmm. recycle the bags or do you not even?
No, I don't use plastic bags. So there are cloth bulk bags that you can buy. And some people make them themselves. People who are handy, who like to sew. That's not me. There's a company called Eco Bags that has cloth bulk bags. Chico Bag has some bulk bags now. There's a company called ReuseIt.com that has tons of reusable containers, bags, cups, bottles, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, and before I let you go, Danielle, you live in North Carolina, and I don't know about Wilmington, but it's not probably not the most environmentally conscious state in the world, or am I wrong? I mean, it depends on where you live, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm on the coast, so it's a progressive area in some sense, but not quite as progressive as San Francisco.
And so your neighbors or your friends are kind of supportive of it. How do they react?
I've always been the type of person that I use myself as an example. So anything that I do, my friends always take a little bit from. I don't expect them to, you know, be doing everything that I do. But if they could just take one thing and learn from it and make a change, I mean, that's what it's all about.
Yeah. All right. Well, good. Well, thanks for sharing it with us this morning.
Yeah, thank you.
We've got some Facebook comments as well. And by the way, you can find photos of our staff's plastic challenge efforts to reduce plastic, along with a video of Beth Terry's TED Talk. It's all at our website, kqed.org/forum. And on our Facebook page, we've found some comments as well. Joe stated, cannot live without pens, bicycle helmet, my backpack, waterproof items, reusable to-go containers for work and travel. Water bottle, reusable. Coffee mug, reusable. A lot of plastic. And he also mentions a room fan, space heater, my fridge, a stapler.
Yeah, so many things and so many choices for reducing your plastic consumption there. This is my reusable, refillable fountain pen, which I refill from a bottle of ink, actually. And I use pencils as well. As far as to-go containers, take your own stainless steel. You know, I recommend stainless steel over plastic because plastic can leach chemicals. As far as durable items like electronics, appliances, all that kind of stuff, first of all, I always ask myself, do I really need something new? If I do, then I find a way to get it so that I'm not creating more demand for new plastic in the world. So I look for it secondhand, or I find a way to borrow it or rent it. You know, we have tool lending libraries in the Bay Area. So if it's a tool that you're only going to use once, why buy a brand new one? You know, borrow it and give it back.
We live in such a disposable culture.
Yeah.
You just, nothing gets repaired, it seems, anymore. Very few things.
Yeah.
It's just cheaper to throw it out.
I have
a new
learned
one.
How to repair so many things. I repaired a blow dryer. I repaired a rice cooker. I actually have a pair of headphones that my cats chewed through the cord. And so I found a soldering iron from a guy on Craigslist, and some instructions online. I'm going to try to fix the cord and see what I can do. You know what? These things are fun too. It's really fun, and it makes you feel so self-sufficient to be able to fix things instead of relying on companies and having to buy new stuff all the time.
Here's another Facebook comment from Autumn, who writes, I could not live without my glasses, which are plastic. My prescription is such that trying to use regular glass would be extremely heavy and unwieldy and probably give me headaches from those problems. Also, I have a medical implant that's partially made of plastic.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some things you really can't avoid.
Yeah.
What about your glasses?
My glasses are plastic. And also, like I said, you know, there are certain things I can't avoid, like prescription medications that come in plastic bottles. I think we have to just be really judicious in our use of plastics and focus on those areas where we're creating the most waste and then have the most impact. You know, don't get hung up on one little thing if there are plenty of other things you can be doing.
Yeah. Here's some other comments from our listeners. Paul in Palo Alto writes, I avoid use of plastic as much as possible. The one place I've not found an alternative solution is cleaning up after my dog.
That's a big one, and I have a section in my book on that too. Some people use old newspaper. One woman said that she uses pages from the yellow pages and old expired yellow pages. But the other thing is, think about all the plastic wrappers, disposable plastic that you still have in your life. If you haven't gone as completely plastic free as some of us, I bet you have a ton of that kind of stuff. And all of those things can be used to pick up dog poop. You don't have to get new bags to pick up dog poop.
And is that better than getting a bag that's compostable?
I don't recommend spending money on compostable bags if they're just going to go in the trash and go to the landfill. You know, there's actually also a dog...
Because they cost something, or they're bad for the
environment? Well, because they will break down and create methane gas. They're not meant to go in the landfill. They're meant to go in the compost, those compostable bags. But you know what? There's actually also a dog poop composter if you have a yard that you can use. And I have information on that in my book as well.
All right. Another email from Anne in Palo Alto. How do you shop at a farmer's market or for small vegetables at a supermarket? I use a cloth shopping bag, but use a plastic for the 2 pounds of green beans, for example. For a while, I saved these and reused them, but I got worried by news reports about bacteria that could multiply in the bags.
Yeah, I think it's really important to use a reusable bag that you can wash and to actually wash them. And I say that in the book, too. That's just common sense. And so for green beans and things like that, I carry a very lightweight cotton slash hemp bulk bag from Chico Bags. That's my preference. And then, you know, at the farmer's market, those vendors love having their containers back so they can reuse them. So if you buy strawberries or cherry tomatoes or any small thing like that that comes in a plastic container, bring your own container or bring your own bag, dump it out, and hand it right back to them. They will reuse it. You can't do that at the grocery store.
Yeah. Joshua writes, what about toothpaste? Is there toothpaste that doesn't come in packaged in plastic? What would you suggest?
I have a whole bunch of solutions for toothpaste. Different people like different things. Some people are great with plain baking soda, actually. I found that to be a little abrasive. The company Lush makes something called Toothy Tabs, which come in a cardboard box. They look like little pills, but you crunch them up between your teeth and you brush and they foam up. They actually
You put rose petal juice in those water. Rose petal oil.
No. They're actual toothpaste. They have some sweetener in them, but they're just little tablets and they really work. You're giving me this
face.
I'm
thinking about my lavender shampoo. I love.
There are lots of different options for toothpaste.
You know, I think some people too, they see the little things, affordable luxuries, you know, like shampoo that's all natural, maybe in plastic, but I wonder if people are listening and thinking, you know, I don't want to, those are things I can afford. They may be in plastic, but they're something that give me pleasure and I can't afford to go out and, you know, take an expensive vacation or whatever.
You know what, one thing that I encourage people to do is to examine their priorities and to figure out what things are important to you, what things really give you pleasure and make you happy, and what things are things that you just buy automatically that you don't really need to have in your life. And focus on those things first. You know, if there's something that you love to have, don't make that the first thing that you worry about.
Yeah. All right. Let's go back to the phones now. Rebecca in San Francisco. Welcome.
Hi. I have 18-month-old twins, and I was doing really well with reducing plastic in my life until I had babies. And I was really surprised at how many places I couldn't avoid plastic, even though I really wanted to, especially with their small bodies and trying to avoid the chemicals.
Yeah.
Like what are some examples?
So one of the really surprising examples for me was if you are trying to breastfeed and you decide to pump, all of the parts are made from plastic, the milk goes through plastic, and you can't actually store breast milk in glass bottles.
Why is that?
Why can't you store it in glass bottles?
Because the leukocytes in the milk that are one of the main reasons you're using it adhere to the glass, and they don't stay in the milk in suspension.
Well, I wonder if
I have connected with so many moms and so many mom bloggers who are working to green their lives and also to get the plastic out. And if you would contact me at beth@myplasticfreelife.com, I would be happy to try to do some research for you on that, because I don't know. I believe I heard something about a glass pump, though, actually.
Really?
Yeah, but I could be getting that a little bit wrong. So that sounds like something important. I didn't realize that you couldn't store breast milk in glass. I would love to learn more about that and maybe write a blog post about it. So if you would contact me, I would love that.
Yeah. And the other thing is just the number of toys that people give you. You know, everything is made from plastics for babies. And as much as I try, you know, there's always this kind of social issue of asking very generous, kind people to not give you things or to come off as a snob that you want non-toxic wooden toys all the time.
Yeah. And Beth, there is that whole question of sort of judgment, too.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want people to think you're judging them all the time.
Right. That is tricky. I think sometimes, though, it has more to do with our expectations and our being concerned that people, what people are going to think of us, more than what they actually think. And I've found that if I'm just myself, very positive, very non-judgmental, and I make requests of people, they're less likely to think I'm judging them and more likely to respond positively. Also, it kind of has to do with how you approach people. And that is a tricky subject, though. And it is the topic of much discussion among those of us who are trying to green our lifestyles. What do we do about gifts?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's an ongoing conversation.
Struggle. All
yeah.
right, Rebecca, thanks so much for the call. Let's try to sneak one more in here. Catherine in San Rafael, welcome.
Hi, this is Catherine. I'm actually parked outside of Whole Foods in San Rafael. I'm about to go in, and I'm going to remember my reusable bags. Okay. But frequently when I go into San Rafael Whole Foods or other grocery stores, I forget my bags. And so when I'm checking out, rather than asking those people to use a bag, whether it's paper or plastic, I say, is it okay just to put it back in the cart?
Yeah.
And I'll take it back out to my car and fill the bags that are in my car. So I was hoping that I could inspire Whole Foods to do this and make it a rule. But in the meantime, I'm really glad San Francisco has a no plastic law, and I hope that will spread to other cities like Berkeley, where I live.
All right. Thanks very much. I'm surprised Berkeley doesn't have that law already.
You know what? A lot of cities are having a difficult time because of the challenges from the plastic bag industry, which is why it's so important that we get this bill passed on the state level.
Yeah. Another quick email here, really quick, from Bill, who mentions that he's an insulin-dependent diabetic. Test strips and lancets, insulin needles, they're all plastic. And again,
yeah.
you can't eliminate it altogether.
No. You know, we just found out that my nephew has Crohn's disease, and he goes through tons and tons of plastic to deal with that. And you know, that's just the way it is right now for him.
Yeah, but so the bottom line, do what you can. Be aware, do what you can do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
In the last moment here, just any advice for folks who want to make a difference, who want to try to reduce it? Where should they start?
Well, for me, I started with plastic grocery bags and just always getting in the habit of bringing my grocery bag to the store with me. And I have little compressible Chico bags that I keep in my purse so that I'm never without a bag. The second thing was reducing bottled water. And then after that, it really has to do with your lifestyle and your choices.
All right. Beth Terry, her book is called Plastic Free, How I Kick the Plastic Habit and How You Can Too. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
And you can find photos of our staff's plastic challenge efforts and a video of Beth's TED Talk at our website. It's kqed.org/forum. You can also find Forum on Twitter, by the way. Our handle is @KQEDForum. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Amy Machado, and Vinnie Tong. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our engineer today is Howard Gelman. And our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Scott Schaefer, here for Michael Krasny. Thanks so much for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.